guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
That right there was impressive. Ken Griffey Jr. giving him the trophy, but Pete Alonso,
he made that look easy.
Wow.
Spin it to win it, Derby champion.
Wait a second. What happened to Ken Griffey Jr.? Did he eat Jay Buhner?
You haven't seen him?
He's been a big boy since the moment he retired.
Well, I guess if I remember the last year of his career, he was in Chicago and then he went to Seattle again. And he was getting pretty big and they were still sticking him out in center field in Chicago. So I guess, I guess I do remember that.
He's a guy who I didn't think would get big this quickly in life. Because he's what, 51, my age? Like, I'm a big guy, so if I'm big, it's not surprising.
Big glass house we're all sitting in, except for that.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I'm you know, if I'm a fatty, I'm a fatty, and I'm fine with that. But Griffey was
for life.
Griffey Jr. was a guy that I thought, man, you know, he's just going to be in shape till he, you know, and I mean, eventually start to gain some weight. But yeah, I was surprised to see that he, the kid is no more the kid. Is that a nice way to say it?
It's like he ate a collection of kids right before he handed that trophy to Pete Alonso. But this is a Tuesday, which means who gets it and who doesn't here on Mackie and Judd. Daily Minnesota sports entertainment. And damn it, we want titles, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you missed it yesterday, we did a deep dive into the idea that Kirk Cousins is a garbage time quarterback, whether it's myth or fact, on Purple Daily. So check that out. But let's fire up some appropriate music here and let's dive in. We'll start with Judd Zolgad. Who gets it and who doesn't this week, the middle of July, 2021?
You know who gets it, Phil? You know who gets it, Declan? Vikings linebacker Anthony Barr. Because our friends, Jim Rich, I believe it was, sat down with Anthony Barr. And he talked to him about the upcoming season. And Anthony Barr is a cliche maestro ordinarily. Like, he's not going to say much to set your spidey senses off. But in this case, he says, Anthony Barr, I really do believe that we have a Super Bowl winning team this year. I really do believe that we have a Super Bowl winning team this year. Anthony Barr, congratulations. Number one, you should be right. Number two, I love the fact that you have in some ways joined the reckless speculation lifestyle of the Mackie and Judd show.
Right.
Because we all have said the same thing. The fact that anybody from TCO Performance Center is dialing up the pressure, they get it. I love this. Good for you. This is not a cliche. It's not. And I mean, of course, he's going to have expectations. But the fact that in the month of July, before training camp starts, he mentioned Super Bowl. You get it.
I love it too. You know, I don't know if he's right or not. I think I need to see a couple of rookie offensive linemen in a real game. I need to see who's going to be rushing the passer from the right side. I need to see if Danielle Hunter is still alive in a game setting. Like, we haven't seen him play a game in like 2 years. There's a lot of things we need to see. But the thing I love about this is Anthony Barr, add him to the list of Vikings players that are leaning into the expectations and leaning into the pressure. It kind of feels like with all these Minnesota men's teams, we kind of like, as fans and even media, it's like we're so afraid to put that expectation, championship level expectation, on these teams. Well, I don't know about championship. I mean, if they make the playoffs, it's a success, and then we'll sort of cross our fingers and pray and see what happens. And the Twins, it's like, well, maybe they can win a playoff game, you know, not this year, but sometime soon. I love, so no, we've heard, I want to say Adam Thielen said some variation of this too at minicamp. He said this is like the most optimistic he's been about a Vikings team. And a couple others have sort of insinuated too. So I'm all for leaning into the expectation. That's great.
The fact that he mentions Super Bowl is what I absolutely love, though, because that is an expectation and that is immediate pressure that I think if you're a good team, you handle, right? Like, this is not a pie in the sky. Well, we might be good. Maybe it's a Super Bowl year. This is look at what we've done defensively. Barr's right. I mean, what they have done defensively was, aside from the right defensive end, they have basically filled every mandate the coach, who's a defensive guy, had. I love the fact that if Thielen put the – if the pressure was an oven and Thielen put the pressure at, let's say, what's an ordinary cooking temp, Dex? Three something?
A lower 100. That's 51.
Yeah.
That's 51. It's like, what, like a thousand?
A conventional oven works. Yeah, like 400 degrees, you know, 420. Okay. Like what?
Anthony Barr.
It's like, well, like 75 degrees. Warm up that pizza.
I like how we just went to convection ovens. Anyway, it's 500. Now it's turned up to 500 because when you mention Super Bowl, you're putting the big souffle in.
When's the last time you actually went down underneath your grill and turned the propane tank on or off? Or do you leave that up to?
That's a Dawn thing, isn't it?
No, she turns the actual. Barbecue on. I'm trying to think the last time I did, because I've done this before, because it takes some work sometimes.
What,
and like Dawn will ask me, well, yeah, because it gets turned off real tight sometimes, and then I have to come out and loosen it.
Get to the gym, baby.
No. I said I have to loosen it, but then I leave it to her to turn it on.
So you're like the guy who can't open the pickle jar and hands it to somebody else, and when they open it, you're like, but I loosened it.
No. I'm the guy who opens the pickle jar, but I don't eat the pickle. So I turn the propane tank on, but I don't fire it up then.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be around that flame. A lot of bad things can happen.
Before we jump to the next, who gets it, who doesn't here. Declan and both you guys, do you feel like the Vikings are the type of team that embraces? Do you feel like the Vikings make love to the expectations and the pressure? Are they going to will now that these players are throwing out Super Bowl? Is this going to be a problem for them?
Make love to the pressure. That's an interesting way to look at it. I think sometimes they're just a little bit maybe too premature, and they kind of don't come through at the end.
Premature evacuation from the expectations.
Yes, it's exactly what I think about the Vikings and Super Bowl expectations. But you know, it's 2021. It's a new year. It's a new year, baby. It's a new year. Everyone's a clean slate. You never know.
Here's what I love about this. Here's what I love about what Barr did, because this is the most important thing. Who's the most important person on the team? Who's going to have to handle this pressure very, very well? Your quarterback.
Chad Beebe. That's right.
Yeah. BC Johnson.
God.
No, your quarterback is. There is going to be... This is what I love, you guys. 2021, we get the questions about Kirk answered. Like, if we're wrong, we're going to be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So he is in a position now where all the questions, I think, and yes, the offensive line might not be perfect, but they've taken steps to improve it, okay? Like at some point in time, you've done enough to improve it. So that being said, this answers all the questions about this team and the quarterback. That's what I love about this.
All right, more Vikings here. You know who gets it? Pro Football Reference gets it. And here's why. So the NFL, what's the NFL? Like a $10, $12 billion entity now? Mm-hmm. I want to say it's like if you take all the revenue and all the teams and everything, it's like a $12 billion entity. I mean, they are literally just a money factory at the NFL. And yet up until yesterday, the NFL had not gone back and tracked sack data prior to 1982. So all of the, you know, all-time single season sack record or all-time list of sack leaders, like it doesn't include any of those legendary players, the Deacon Jones, Alan Page, right? The legends from the 60s, the 70s, because the NFL just never, like they could never hire an intern to just go back and watch some film for a summer and tally the sack totals. And so Pro Football Reference comes in and says, all right, well, I guess if no one else is going to do this, we're going to do it. So they went back and they tracked all of the sacks to, like, I want to say like 98% of the sacks, they're confident that they tallied before 1982. And here's the good news for the Vikings. Of the top 25 all-time sack leaders, there are 6 Vikings on this list. 7 if you want to include the 1 year of Al Baker in 1988, who came to the Vikings like well after his prime. But you've got now, so Bruce Smith still leads with 200 career sacks. Deacon Jones is on the list, third all time for the first time, because all of his sacks came between 1961 and 1974. And correct me if I'm wrong, Judd, he was the head slap guy, right? Deacon Jones?
He'd take that big
paw and just slap, he'd like slap the right tackle over the side of the head and just send him to the ground. So Chris Dolman is 7th. Alan Page is 8th. John Randall tied for 14th. Jared Allen tied for 16th. Carl Eller tied for 18th. And Jim Marshall tied for 22nd. Get that man in Seriously. The Hall of Fame. A 19-year career, top 25 all-time in sacks. And so what do you guys think of the Vikings basically being, in terms of franchises, like the sack franchise in NFL history?
It's not surprising, right? Like if you go back and look at all of the names that you just mentioned from the past, we knew that they had a ton of sacks. Now, here's my question. Is the league going to work with PFF to recognize this and find a way to add these guys to the list? I mean, here's the thing about, and I don't get it. One is, how do you not recognize the sack and like tally it and keep track officially until 1982? That makes no sense. Here's the second thing, though. Baseball's going back now and incorporating the Negro League statistics into mm-hmm. their official stats. So, like, they've got people pouring. I mean, baseball screwed up, but this is a good idea. They're going through and pouring through, I don't know, box scores, play-by-plays, whatever, to incorporate a whole nother league into their stats. So is the National Football League going to work with PFF now to incorporate this to make it official?
It's PFR, actually.
PFR. Yeah. Yeah. Pro Football Reference. But are they going to do that? Because they really should. Like, it's embarrassing that you don't have, if Deacon Jones doesn't get recognized because, well, we just didn't keep track of sacks back then. That's a really lame excuse.
Yeah. The Negro Leagues thing, I love the fact that they're going back. And I don't even know, like, I read one time, like 10 years ago, Baseball Reference, Football Reference, there's basketball, hockey, and I think there's a soccer reference, and they've expanded a lot over the last 10 years. But for the baseball side of things, they literally go back. They partner with like RetroSheet.org and these other organizations that have volunteers that go back and they try to find for the way back days, like 1920, 1930. There's not like an internet log of box scores, so they have to find records like handwritten Judd Zulgad like box score notebooks, and that's the way that they have to tally up some of these stats. Like if you scored a game in 1922. That we don't want to have in our archives. baseballreference.com probably wants it. But I think they've miraculously found all of these going back. Like Josh Gibson is the home run king of the Negro Leagues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all due respect to, you know, to pitchers from the 1930s and 40s in the major leagues, but like they never faced Josh Gibson. They never faced some of the best. Like Babe Ruth, for instance, never faced a black pitcher, never faced a Dominican pitcher, never faced a Venezuelan pitcher. So
it was white guy baseball.
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, that's all it was.
Yeah.
But anyway, recognize the sack. Like, go back and fix this officially.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why they didn't hire an intern 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Go do it. All right, who gets it? Who doesn't, Declan?
All right, I'm gonna go with the who doesn't. Phil, you can keep your headphones. You can keep your head on too. You can keep your headphones on here. I think you'll be okay.
Spoilers coming.
You'll be okay. You'll be okay. Who doesn't is the 8:20 to 8:30 block of programming yesterday that I do endure. So I had dual screens going yesterday. I had The Bachelorette on the TV. I had the Derby on the laptop. And it just queued up perfectly that Ohtani versus Juan Soto went last, I believe, in the first round matchup. So it still took like an hour to get there. But I'm watching The Bachelorette. I'm watching Katie. Over the next 10 minutes, my heart could not contain what was happening on both screens at the same time. Obviously, we know what happened to the Derby. Ohtani gets off to like this super poor start, but then all of a sudden just starts ripping bombs, goes into a triple overtime, a three-swing off with Juan Soto. It's insane. Meanwhile, on The Bachelorette, something very significant happened and took place, and I was trying to really control my emotions while also watching this amazing home run Derby.
Don't spoil it.
For the next 15 minutes, I was a puddle of emotion trying to figure out how to handle everything that was being thrown at me, from Ohtani going to a three-swing off to Katie doing something on The Bachelorette. I could not contain myself for a 15-minute chunk of time.
You're saying that you being an emotional head case is the fault of
yes.
the block of time
yes.
on your YouTube TV subscription.
I'd
say this is a you problem, though.
It is. I don't get it. Yes, no. Yeah, it's a me thing.
The people that program these things aren't thinking, we really can't put the home run derby against The Bachelor.
Correct.
Because there's a lot of
baseball. It's funny because baseball never thinks about what programming they might be up against ever.
No.
Like, this is what you've brought up is actually a bigger issue with baseball, and that, yeah, congratulations, you do get to own, like, 3 days in the middle of July with your All-Star game and home run derby and whatnot, but the Major League Baseball draft has just sort of taken place like over a Sunday night and a Monday, right? Like it was the draft took place just sort of randomly on a Sunday. And I get that it's not going to be the NFL draft or the NBA draft where it's all players that you've watched play high profile games in college, like, so you're not going to really know the players, but isn't there a better way to present your draft than to just sort of tuck it away? Like the second day of the draft was just at noon on a Monday. Like,
but
what?
The first round to them is the big deal. And it used to be in June, and now they stuck it in the All-Star game weekend to try and make it bigger. And you know what I've come to the conclusion of? Some drafts don't matter. Like they're going to be drafts and you're going to take guys. But I mean, like baseball's tried so hard, and same with our sport decks, hockey. I mean, I guess the first round's okay, but after like the first five names, you don't know. I mean, in that sense, football just has something incredibly special. And I think basketball's draft is probably second, Phil. I don't know if you would agree with that, but
100%.
But yeah. Basketball's draft is second. But after that, it's like the hockey and baseball draft guys just sort of fall in line.
Right.
The one baseball thing that I will say that drives me crazy is, why is the futures game played on a day when there's 10 big league games going on? That's your draft.
Didn't that used to be game. On All-Star weekend though? Wasn't that
it's always been on
All-Star
the Sunday
weekend thing? Yeah.
They've always done it
and
on
they did
Sunday.
It, and they did it on Sunday again, but my point is there's like 10 other there's a full slate of games going on.
Why can't they? So I get that they're doing it on a Sunday cuz there's a chance some people could watch it on a Sunday during the day. But like, couldn't they do it? I mean, I know they want to play a full game, but the NBA does the rookie game, and then they do, don't they, on the same night they do the rookie game, and they do on, Friday night is the rookie game, right? And then Saturday is the dunk contest and the three.
Yep. Yes.
And then Sunday is the All-Star game. So, like, couldn't baseball start their series, you know, end their series on a Sunday? Monday's the rookie game or the futures game. Tuesday's the derby. Wednesday's the All-Star game. Thursday's an off day. Friday's the three-game series back, right? Then we just fixed it.
Well, it's not hard to, because
own the whole week.
Because what makes the football draft special? What makes it special is these players are going to be drafted and then play for your favorite team the next year, right? The futures game is the draft, because those are the guys who are going to pop. Like, if I'm you selected with the second overall pick, see you in 4 years.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's true. All right. Who gets it? Who doesn't? We already knew this, but more solidification that Bears head coach Matt Nagy doesn't get it. He told NBC Sports Chicago, the time is now for the Bears offense. This is going to be a quick one here, boys. I don't have an elaborate explanation. All I have to tell Matt Nagy is it's never time for the Bears offense. I've been alive since 1985. The Bears won a Super Bowl in my first year of existence. It was not time then for the Bears offense.
No.
It's never time for the Bears offense. It will not be time for the Bears offense this year. It might be time for the Bears offense to some extent in a couple years when their young quarterback emerges. But
yes.
I can assure you that this is not the year where it's time for the Bears offense.
Andy Dalton is about to be QB your starting one. Quarterback on opening day, QB1, and you say that. Yeah, you're right. It's time.
We're going to unleash the red rifle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just like they did in Dallas last year.
All right, Judd, who gets it, who doesn't?
All right. I am wearing, courtesy of my niece Jordan, my new Fear the Deer shirt here.
Wow. Look at that bandwagon jumping.
And
wow.
I'm going to tell you who gets it. Here you go. For those watching, Fear the Deer, baby. Fear the Deer. There you go.
Look at this guy.
Here's who gets it. Milwaukee's sports teams. Okay? So I'm not saying the Packers, because Packers are sort of a mess right now. The Bucks are in the finals, and the Brewers are in first place by 4 games in the National League Central. And I have only one question. Why can't we get it, too? It's Milwaukee. There's no... I mean, they're a smaller market. And right now they have a team... They've got the Deer District during games that's got like 30,000 people in it cheering wildly outside the Pfizer Forum, which obviously has fans in it for the finals. The Brewers are going great guns. They get it, and I personally am jealous.
Here's what's comical. I'm glad you brought this up. So I follow some of the sports radio personalities, including our guy Rami, who does afternoons on the Fan in Milwaukee. But I follow some of the other sports radio personalities in Milwaukee. And there's a couple in particular that talk about the Wisconsin sports curse, that apparently fans in Wisconsin, that there's, because the Packers keep going to NFC championship games and getting beat.
Oh, I saw this.
And the Bucks keep falling short in the playoffs, and the Badgers lost a bunch of Rose Bowls in a row, that the Brewers have gone to the playoff, like, you know, they traded for CeCe and got beat, you know, 10 years ago.
Sure.
And there's all these times where they've had decent teams that go to the playoffs and get beat. And so they legitimately in Wisconsin, yes, they've had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for 30 years. They've won two Super Bowls since the mid-1990s. And Wisconsin continually is one of the two or three best teams in the Big Ten. And the Brewers are relevant, and the, you know, maybe they don't have 10 championships like Boston teams, but they legitimately talk about a Wisconsin sports curse on the other side of the border on Wisconsin sports radio. Yes.
You got to, you know what? Just shut up. Shut up, Wisconsin sports curse. 30 plus years? 30 years of great quarterback play, basically. You don't have a sports curse. We got a sports curse.
It's pretty hilarious.
But anyway, smaller market than ours, okay? Wolves, Twins, follow suit, please.
So are you, where'd you get this Fear the Deer shirt? Did you buy this?
No, my niece Jordan lives in Milwaukee. And so as a guy who's a bit of a front runner occasionally, I told Dawn, hey, have her send me an extra large Fear the Deer shirt. So she went and found one at the store and sent it to me.
Listen, if the Timberwolves aren't fulfilling your needs, then you're going to go to another team. You know,
I had to do it.
The Timberwolves forced you to do this.
I had to do it. And you know what? It's family, so I wear it. I like it.
It's family.
All right, Declan.
It's on the family.
Who gets it? Who doesn't? Are you gonna blame YouTube TV for your problems?
No, I will not. Actually, I don't mean to get a little heavier here, and I know we're recording a lot earlier, but I do want to give a who gets it to something that I saw yesterday. Tanner Morgan put out a tweet yesterday that his father passed away from brain cancer. It was a glioblastoma. It's the most aggressive form of brain cancer. I lost my dad to a glioblastoma. And he really talked about faith being something that really worked for him. Now, I'm not someone who used faith to get over that, but I know how aggressive and like significant that cancer can take on a family. And I think it was awesome how he basically summed up that his dad used his faith and his family used this as something to really get over, because it is a very rigorous and vicious cancer. Now, some of us have been on this show that Phil, you lost your mom to an aggressive form of cancer. We've been through a very tough time before, and just seeing this note, not even knowing Tanner Morgan, you know, I have never met the guy. I've only seen him play Gopher football, but just the way he summed it up, I know how difficult that cancer can be, and I think it was a really touching tribute, and the way he carried himself and still continues to carry himself today, I think is really admirable. So I really want to give a big shout out to the Tanner Morgan family of Who Gets It.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, I don't know him personally either, but it just everything ever since he basically stepped into the quarterback role 3 years ago, just seems like everyone loves him. He's a great leader.
Yeah.
And I root for him. And I think that, so what was the timeline on this? When did his dad find out that he had cancer?
His dad had a stroke, I believe, in May of last year. And then they figured out it was because of brain cancer. So I believe, and that was in July, he got diagnosed. And yeah, I mean, it's quick. It can be a really quick and aggressive cancer. So I think he obviously did the best he could. I think Phil Irvin, is it, who used to cover the Gophers for Fox Sports North. He did a big piece on it about 9 months ago and just talked to Tanner about it. It's a really aggressive form. And I think just the way he carried himself was a pretty damn good thing. And I think it's worth shouting out.
Amen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I still think if he has a big season, I think he might have a chance to at least be a backup NFL quarterback.
I think
I mean, there were some people like before last year when the offense had a down year where like he was projected to be like one of the top five or six quarterbacks in his draft class. So
I think PFF just put out college rankings, and I believe he was 32 going into this season of the top projected 100 quarterbacks in college football. He was 32, which, yeah, right, could still obviously be a draft pick next season.
By the way, speaking of Gopher sports, our friends at Federated Insurance have been supporting Gophers Athletics for a long, long time, and they've been supporting business owners in the Twin Cities since 1904. They're based in Owatonna, They're one of us, and they understand as a business owner, time is money, and so they give their clients access to the resources and information they need tailored to whatever your business is. So if you're just looking for more frontline protection, more peace of mind, federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. Any other final who gets it, who doesn't from you guys?
Yeah, I got one quick. And it's a familiar refrain with who doesn't get it, but I think it's a different reason why. Rocco Baldelli doesn't get it because, and I tweeted about this, I think, on Saturday. Nick Gordon, okay? I realize Nick Gordon might not be a great player. I realize he might not be good, but your team stinks, and you have a chance right now to find out. And Nick Gordon did not play in the entire four-game series. He did not play, so he didn't even pinch run in the entire four-game sweep of the Tigers. And I'm not quite sure why you wouldn't play this kid. What, Phil, sixth overall pick or fifth overall pick in, I think, the 2014 draft?
Yeah.
And, like, it's go time now. You need to find out. And if he can't play, he can't play. But if he can, and he certainly has some attributes, you're treating him like he's a bench player on a good team, which he is not. So give him a shot at least occasionally to play. He's proven to you he can play center. He can play second base. Heck, he can play a little bit of third as well. I don't understand what they're doing here unless they've made a decision that they don't like him. And to be honest with you, if they have, I don't trust them to make the decision this quickly because they have proven in the past that their decision making at times can be very, very flawed. Badu, Lamont Wade Jr. So this one is a bit confusing to me when you're acting like this guy's a bench player on a good team when he's actually being used as a bench player on a bad team.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Like, it's almost, I mean, not almost. It is like Rocco is managing this team as if they're trying to claw their way back in the standings, which maybe he is. Like, maybe he's thinking, well, until we sell, like, I'm going to try and do whatever I can to try and win as many games as possible, which, you know, whatever, like, I don't have a problem with that, but I'm with you on the Nick Gordon side. He has struggled after his hot start, and I don't think, like, whatever people thought of him when he was 18, 19 years old and he was drafted and, like, first round pick, right? I don't think he's ever going to be a star player that carries your franchise. But this dude hit 300 in his last full season at AAA in 2019. He played a couple weeks in St. Paul at the beginning of the season, hit almost 400 in the minor. Like, he's kind of conquered the minor leagues
right,
a 300-plus hitter the last couple times out in AAA and got off to a really hot start. So I'm with you. You can't find a game for him against the Tigers.
It's just very bizarre.
And to your point, it is hard to trust a front office at this point that said, Lamont Wade Jr., we can just kind of throw him away for a middle reliever guy, Sean Anderson, that gets released, you know, 5 minutes later, or Akil Badu, former second-round pick, who hit a home run right in front of you at Target Field this weekend, right?
Yeah, like, he can play.
A really good player leading off for the Tigers. So, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Radar's so, anyway, I got, playing actually, Gordon, you have nothing to lose by playing him.
I got one more for you just on the baseball front, and we can move on here. Coors Field gets it. You know, we're looking for things that can make baseball more fun. How about just playing every game in Coors Field? Just like, one game can start at 5 in the morning, and then another one can start at, like, 8:30. It's a beautiful setting. It's in the, you know, part of what I love about baseball is just the unique ballparks and settings.
Yeah.
You
yes,
got the Rocky
gorgeous.
Mountains in the background and downtown Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You're 5,000 feet above sea level, so everyone hits 520-foot home runs, which is amazing. And it's, you know, it's named after a beer, so it's, you know, you're walking into a fun party vibe.
And it's never changed its name, right?
No, I don't think so.
No,
like, unlike all, you know, it's been Coors Field as opposed to, well, this year it's going to be Miller Lite Ballpark, and then we're going to change the name to an insurance company. So, yeah, it's good.
I'm all about
the best part about that last night was I think they went back to the juice ball a bit, and they did not put the ball in the humidor beforehand. And so that might be the get it part. When you play in Colorado, no more humidor for the baseball, just let her fly.
Dude, it was like one of those old Bugs Bunny cartoons where they're just like swing, 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 swing. Like, these dudes are just gassed after swinging as hard as they can for 3 minutes straight and then got to get up and do it again.
How about the guy who, how about the pitchers? Those are the guys I feel for.
Yeah, who was the,
like, those old men out there? I'm heel.
Who was throwing to Juan Soto? Was that a manager or was that like a
Was that a hitting coach? Was that a hitting coach?
Because at one point he's a lefty, I think, right? He had a pitch slip out of his hand at one point. Or did he purposely throw a ball like 20 feet behind Soto?
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. It might have been was it Ohtani even? Or yeah, I think it was Soto. It was Soto. I remember you talking about.
Joey Gallo's guy, though, was a coach, and he sort of struggled at first. And the problem is if you struggle at first, your guy is going to struggle.
Someone even tallied Alonso's heat map from his location, and literally like this 55, I don't know if it was his dad or if his pitching coach, they get to pick who it is. Everything was like right in the heart of the zone. There wasn't anything outside of a cookie zone. Like he did like every single pitch. Wow. It was a great heat map of it.
Get that guy.
It was the son of legendary Chicago sports writer Bill Jouse, who was the original host of the first ever like sports show. It was on Sports Channel America, I think. It was called
the one that SNL mocked for years.
Yes, and in fact, Bill Jouse, they asked his kid, "Who was your dad?" He said, "Farley."
Who was your daddy? What does he do?
He said Farley was the character who played my dad.
See, I thought you guys were going to say it was Matt Shoemaker, but that would have been just an unnecessary cheap shot.
You know what? That might not. You know what? That's a great idea. Take all of the worst pitchers in the season, force them to go to the All-Star game for the home run derby. I love that idea.
It can be career redemption. So it's got to be guys who've been released mid-season. It's got to be guys who are over the age of like 33, and this is your chance to redeem your career. You're going to come to the All-Star game, and you're going to try to get these guys out. Like, you're not going to throw lobbing. You know, it's going to be a different type of home run derby, but you're going to try and get these guys out, and they're going to try and hit home runs in Coors Field off of you. And if you succeed, hey, there's a bunch of eyeballs on you. You might get signed to a contract for the second
half. You know what this could be, Phil? This could be a reunion of Twins pitchers circa 2011 to, like, 2016.
Scott Diamond.
Nolasco, Vance Worley.
Vance Worley just got called up by somebody.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm pretty sure he's back in the major leagues now.
The Vanimal, baby. Yeah.
I love that idea. That's a great one.
Rexpecs.
The Vanimal. All right. So Mackie and Judd, Minnesota sports entertainment on a daily basis. And last summer when we had like 4 months of no sports and we were just doing a ton of fun, just let's look back at let's do random season recalls. Let's do rewinds. And we had a segment. We haven't done this in a while called Alternate Reality, where we go back and we take a scenario, a draft, a game, a season. And if, let's just say, if this thing would have happened instead of this thing, how would things have played out? And I forget who on Twitter sent this to us. I forgot to earmark it, but I remember the question. Somebody tweeted to us on like Saturday this weekend, an alternate reality scenario for the Minnesota Vikings. 2017, they finished 13-3, Minneapolis Miracle. Then they go in to a hostile road environment against the Philadelphia Eagles, and they just get shellacked. And, you know, the crowd is probably a factor. Just, you know, once you throw the pick six and things start spiraling, it was hard for them to get back on track, right? So the alternate reality scenario here, and there's probably a few of these in this season, but as it was proposed to us, what if Dalvin Cook doesn't get hurt in week 4 against the Detroit Lions? What if you don't go on to lose that game inexplicably 14-7? So they actually they fell to 2-2 on the season after losing that game, then they dusted themselves off and they only lost one game the rest of the regular season. But what if he doesn't get hurt? Do they win that game? Do they finish 14-2? Do they host, the answer is yes on this one, the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC Championship game with a healthy Dalvin Cook offensively? How does that whole stretch and season play out differently if the Vikings don't, it's sort of a two-part thing, if they don't lose to the Lions in that game?
Sure.
And if Dalvin Cook doesn't get hurt in that game?
They play host to Philadelphia, they miss a late field goal and break our hearts still.
So they lose still, but they don't get smoked.
Well, they don't get smoked.
Heartbreaking.
They don't get smoked at home. I love that one because Cook gets hurt, and it sort of did take the steam out of the building, as I recall, because it was pretty evident quickly that it was serious. And so, and I think Dex was sitting by me in the press box that day, if I'm not mistaken. So, all right, so let's go back. They play host to the conference championship game, and I honestly do think that they probably win. If they're at home, because keep in mind then, that is Nick Foles playing in U.S. Bank Stadium, which is incredibly loud and hostile. The Philadelphia, that team was good. I don't think that they were great. And I do think that that building has a way of throwing a lot of quarterbacks, some of who've been pretty damn good, off their game. So I'm going to say the Vikings do win. They actually win, and they continue to play 2 weeks after that at U.S. Bank Stadium in the Super Bowl.
Wow. What about you, Declan? What do you think?
I mean, I think that season was so special and that Dalvin was only a part of it for four games. I don't know if a healthy Dalvin Cook makes it any different, in my opinion. I really don't. I think they still had a pretty damn good offense. And even though I understand like having a healthy Dalvin Cook, who we even saw last year at his full capacity, that could make a bigger difference. But I look at two other big moments in that game of that season of the alternate reality of them getting to the Super Bowl before I even think about Dalvin Cook. And so if you just remove Dalvin Cook, or you add him back into the equation, for me, it doesn't change. It doesn't change for my alternate reality.
Well, I think they beat the Lions. I think that was such a deflating blow, and you lose this guy who clearly in the first three games had become like one of the best running backs in the NFL just right away out of the gate. So I think they beat the Lions, and I don't think there'd be any reason why they wouldn't finish 14-2 if they did it without him anyways, if they finished so strong. I think the biggest question is what happens at home against the Eagles. Is the crowd enough to rattle Nick Foles? Does the defense, that was by far the worst defensive performance of the year for the Vikings. Does the crowd and the home environment and
they don't
just
get
everything
picked apart
about
like
it,
that. They don't get picked apart like that.
Do they get off the line of scrimmage defensively more quickly because of a silent snap count, for instance, right? Like all those things.
And Foles has problems, right? If Foles is playing in front of that crowd, I'm not saying he falls apart completely, but there's no way he has as what's seemingly was for most of the game in Philadelphia, a flawless game, right? Here's my question off of all of this. If you put the stew back together and say that the Vikings played host to that game, because the reality was twofold. The defense fell apart, which I think we could safely say it would not have fallen apart like that at home. It might have struggled a little bit, but not like that. So my question is this. Does Case Keenum have to turn in the slipper at midnight if the game is here? Because that was part of that too. I mean, Keenum was a time bomb as far as eventually something's going to go wrong. And in Philadelphia, it went wrong. So my question is, how much different is Case Keenum's game potentially coming off the miracle if he gets to play that game in the same building that he had experienced the success that he did to end the Saints game?
Yeah, I think he was still prone to make a mistake. Like, sure. I think there was still a chance he would have thrown a bad interception or something. But I think there's something about the crowd getting back on your side and you feeling like you've got 75,000 people behind you that it's probably easier to brush that mistake off as opposed to hostile environment, just from a subconscious standpoint. The biggest question, though, is if we think they would have put up more of a fight against the Eagles at home and maybe they would have won that game, was that team, if Dalvin Cook is healthy, was that team good enough to win a slugfest against Tom Brady, Gronk in his prime? I mean, that was like the peak of the second part of the Patriots dynasty. Ridiculous weapons all over the field. Would that team have beat the Patriots at home, but not really at home, right? Like, there would have been a disproportionate amount of Vikings fans there compared to most Super Bowls.
Right.
So don't get me wrong, like, there would have been Vikings fans there, but it wasn't like, it wouldn't have been a true home game in any sense. Would they have beat the Patriots?
I think they would have. I honestly think they would have. I think I think that defense, if they didn't melt down against Philadelphia, I mean, they put the clamps down. I think they would have been able to do it. I think Zimmer would have been able to come up with something, and it would have been an insane legacy game for Mike Zimmer to really best Bill Belichick in a Super Bowl. I think he could have done it.
Okay, part of this to me is it feels like a very special part of that game. And the Eagles' eventual win was the call of the Philly special play, which loosened up Philadelphia, was a fun play, but was a very defining play of that game. And that was a ballsy call. Like, to make that call at that point in that game is a ballsy call. So my question is, do the Vikings do something, not that play, but do the Vikings have it in them in a game with that much pressure against Belichick to beat the Patriots? And I'm going to say no, and here's why.
Has Zimmer, I mean, how many times has Zimmer dialed anything like that up?
No. Oh, offensively, he'd probably freak out.
Or given the green light for a coordinator to dial it up.
I'm trying to think of that. They had Jerick McKinnon throw that awful pass from the Wildcat time for a home game, which he had been a quarterback in college, so we all thought it might work, and it was absolutely terrible.
Pat Shurmur dialed something up one time, I feel like.
I'm trying to think of the trick plays. Have receivers thrown passes with Zimmer? I'm sure they have.
Was it Diggs to Cousins, that like epic? Was it Diggs who threw that?
Cousins with the dive.
Yes, yeah, so with the dive, which was just like the epitome of Kirk Cousins, I think, as a Viking. Yep.
One step short.
Yeah. But I think the problem would have been that if they had played the Patriots and it had been Zimmer Belichick in the Super Bowl, that Zimmer would have been so uptight and that team would have been incredibly tight, just because that's how that team is, especially when guys play Belichick. So I'm going to say they get to the Super Bowl, but I don't think that they win that game.
I think I'm with you. I think they beat the Eagles at home, and I think they lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And then they become, what, the first team ever to lose five? No team has lost five without winning one.
Yeah, Buffalo's at four. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they would be the first team. But you know what? It would have been the first trip to the Super Bowl since the 70s. And so there would have been
celebration.
Yeah, it would have been.
Oh, I've told you, Phil. I've told you for a long time. A Super Bowl loss would, no question, hurt. But I really believe that Vikings fans would feel somewhat vindicated if the team could just get there.
Yeah. So that's alternate reality on Mackie and Jowd. What do you guys think? Hit us up in the YouTube comment section, Score North YouTube channel. We appreciate everyone who consumes us and our radio faces there. Click that subscribe button. We're just about to 22,000 combined YouTube subscribers across the Score North channel and the Purple Daily channel. And Declan is going to put Judd and I through the random season recall grinder here in a second. But Dennis Kirk is one of our partners here. People ask, like, what's the best way we can support you guys? Well, download our app and listen to all of our shows and read Judd's written work on the app. You can also watch our videos on the app. It's a free app. That's one way. But number two is support our sponsors and our partners on the show. Dennis Kirk is the number one supplier of riding resources and riding gear, clothing and helmets, accessories. They got 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, whether you ride a Harley, a Metric Cruiser, sport bike. Order before 8 p.m., and they ship the same day. If Ragnar is listening, I know you ride, Ragnar. I know that the Vikings parted ways with you a number of years ago, but DennisKirk.com, order by 8 p.m., and they ship the same day, and shipping is free for orders over $89, DennisKirk.com. All right, every week, Declan goes back and finds random Minnesota sports teams from sometime during our lifetimes and quizzes Judd and I on the details, and I feel like we've fared pretty well, except for that one North Stars debacle from a couple weeks ago.
That is correct.
It wasn't a debacle. It was
completely dropped the ball.
It was a little bit of a struggle. It was not a debacle.
Mr. I love the 80s North Stars. Like, what color are their breezers? Judd's like, I don't know.
You give me the 83, 84 North Stars, I'll do just fine, okay? I'm sorry, but my drink, once my drinking year, once my drinking year starts, no, 84, 85, but once my drinking year starts, it changes the dynamic. Sorry. Okay.
All right.
God.
All right, what do you got for us, Deck?
All right. We have the 2010-2011 Minnesota Timberwolves here to start, which is a Kurt Rambis-led team.
Oh, my God.
But
dude,
this is going to be a fun edition of Random Season Recall. As I get the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire bumper music as a nice little bumper here to get a little more suspense.
Wow. He did it this week.
I finally have it. Yeah, finally
he did it this week. He forgot it last week. He was all excited to do it, and then he forgot it.
Forgot
I love
it.
This.
All right, let's start with this one. The 2010-2011 Timberwolves finished with how many wins? I'll give you within a three-win window.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, he gave us – I'm actually glad that he gave us the Kurt Rambis nugget there. I think we would have landed on Kurt Rambis as the coach, but it it makes it official that this wasn't like, oh, this was a year where they kind of maybe popped up a little bit. They were a disaster in the Kurt Rambis era.
Didn't they win like 17 games?
Yeah. Yeah, so your head went to 18, mine went to 17.
Yeah, and you know what? If we're right, that's right in the ballpark. We're going to get the ding.
I don't think it was in the 20s. I don't think it was. I think 18 is the safer number because it covers us from like 15 to 21.
21, yeah.
They would have won more than 14 games, right? I just don't want to get, like, the record is 9. There was a Nuggets team or something, or a Sixers team, like
Sixers
20
team.
Years ago.
Sixers team in the 70s, yeah. No, I think they bypassed that one. But anyway, yeah, I'd say around 18 wins.
Let's go 18 wins.
Yeah! 17 and 65.
Oh, I had it!
Oh, you got it! Got it!
We're within the range, but God, 17 dude. And 65 was the final record for the 2011.
Dude, I mean,
was.
I don't know. Like, this dude. Is like one of the hottest streaks ever. I've had 3 in a row.
Yeah.
If you give me credit that I did say 17. Oh, my God.
I'll give it to you.
Okay. All right, come on. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, it's still right, so. But, yeah, that was outstanding. God, that team was bad. Okay.
All right, Kevin Love and Michael Beasley finished with double figures in points that year, but two other players also did, finished in average double-digit points per game that year. Who were they?
Okay, we're just talking here, Duck.
Yep.
Okay? So, like, this is just among friends. I'd prefer that you duck out.
We'll do.
Is this a Ricky Davis?
No, this is after Ricky Davis. Ricky Davis was like 06, 07.
Okay.
Ricky Davis did not play with... He didn't play with Kevin Love at that point.
Okay.
I think the question here is, when did they trade Al Jefferson? I feel like they might have traded Al Jefferson by now. And when did Ricky Rubio start?
Oh, he started late. He started later. He was
11, 12.
I was at the station when he started, and that's when he tore his ACL.
That was the 2012 spring training, right?
Yes, when we were in spring training because they were playing the Lakers at Target Center. So, yeah, no, this is pre-Ricky.
And this is pre-Pekovic, I think. I don't think Pekovic was on this team.
Okay.
So you had – all right, let's just talk through. So Love, Michael Beasley smoked too much weed.
But had a great toaster.
Great toaster.
He did. I bought his toaster and cheese grater.
And now the toaster's gone, which makes me really sad.
This would have been the year. Oh, okay. It's all coming together here. This would have been the year that Kevin Love had a 30-30 game.
And you left.
I left at halftime.
Yeah.
I mean, they were playing the Knicks, and they were down like 9 at halftime, and Love had like 9-8 or something.
And you left, and then one of the great Wolves accomplishments happened.
Mm-hmm. We did this. And by the way, Beasley was good in that game, too. Beasley had a stretch there where he scored like 30 points a game for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Got off the weed.
Well,
I'm just trying to think.
Or smoke more.
Yeah.
Wes Johnson, I don't think he would have scored 10. So we need two other guys that scored double digits for this team, huh?
Yeah. Oh, wait. So
one only.
This might be a Ryan Gomes. This might be a Ryan Gomes situation. Ryan Gomes came over.
He came over in the Boston trade, right?
Would he have been gone by now? This is... God dang it, dude.
He came over in the Boston trade.
Mm-hmm. So we did this Wolves... Like, the Kevin Love 30-30 game. We did this for a Minnesota Sports Rewind episode. And I'm like, I watched the whole game, and I remember Beasley and Love. I'm trying to remember all the other players around the court. Sebastian Telfair, but he wouldn't have scored 10. Johnny Flynn would have been on this team, but he wouldn't have scored 10, I don't think. So it was like Telfair, Flynn.
Who was the...
Rubio was not over here yet.
Yeah.
Because he was sitting out for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then they drafted Wes Johnson. I'm going to say Wes Johnson's one of them.
I guess, Wes Johnson?
We get 3 wrong guesses, right?
Yep.
So, okay. Al Jefferson. Jeez, my God.
You've been way off, by the way. I'll be honest.
You see, if I can interrupt for 1 second here, this is what happens when we get the random season recall of teams that we like once we've started drinking. Phil's experiencing my North Stars thing right now.
Well, this is also like between...
It's not when you're sitting in your bedroom. See, it's much different if you're little Phil with your TV and you like had kept score of all the games. And then you're older Phil and at halftime of a Knicks game that you're at, you duck out. That's when you forget.
But this is also like a transition period between...
Oh, don't make it. Come
we're,
on.
We're like 3 years removed from the KG era, and we're headed into the Rubio, Pekovic era.
Yep. Who's your third guess?
Pekovic. Wow. Oh, my God.
All right, so... One of these guys... You didn't mention any of these two names, by the way. The first one is Luke Ridnour.
Yes!
Forgot Luke Ridnour. Use the force, Luke. Use the force.
Kevin Martin wasn't on this team.
No. This second one, it's a little nitpicky because he only played 23 games, but he qualified on Basketball Reference, so I counted it. Anthony Tolliver averaged 10-plus points. Oh, I know.
You stuck.
It's a random season recall. Got to remember the random seasons.
I don't feel bad about this.
The Luke Ridnour one, I'm a little shocked he didn't get. A little surprised he didn't get the Luke Ridnour one.
See what happens?
Really?
See?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised.
Can I put in for these from now on to be pre? I mean, I've killed too many brain cells to remember what was going on in these years.
Oh my God!
Yeah, this is my mid-20s here. There was a lot of alcohol.
Phil was the loon by the time Kevin
Love exactly.
Hit,
he was doing great big shots by the third quarter. The Timberwolves finished first in the NBA in this traditional statistic this season. Despite them only winning 17 games, they finished first in the NBA in this traditional statistic.
Well, it wouldn't have been three-point shooting. Kurt Rambis, I think, actively told Kevin Love to not shoot threes.
He did.
And then once Rick Adelman came along, he's like, what? You're a seven-footer that can shoot threes? Get out there, dude.
Told him not to shoot threes. Would it have something? Okay, traditional statistic.
Well, what would this team have been decent at? Is it a positive stat or a negative stat?
No, that's it's positive. I wouldn't say it's negative. No, it's not a negative stat.
They led the league in a category? Free throw? I mean, Kevin Love got to the free throw line a lot, and Kevin Love grabbed a ton of rebounds. So there's that. They led the league in smoking weed. So Michael Beasley was there. So we know that for sure.
They wouldn't have exactly rebounded great, right? With this collection?
Well, Kevin Love was one of the best rebounders in the
right,
league.
But I'm saying the rest of the team. But I guess my question is, would that have put them...
I'm going to say they might have led the league in offensive rebounds.
Okay.
Because they probably missed a lot of shots, and Kevin Love grabbed a lot of offensive rebounds. I'm going to say offensive rebounds.
Yeah!
Offensive.
He's back.
Offensive and total rebounds. So technically, I was going for total rebounds, but
they did lead in
total and offensive rebounds that year.
Kevin Love was amazing because he couldn't jump really, but he would just like position himself below the rim and like link arms with like, you know, somebody, and the ball would just sort of fall into his breadbasket. So
boxing out, man.
He's back. The Wolves Whisperer.
Wow. 3,641 rebounds for the Wolves that year. That was first in the NBA.
Yeah, generally, when you lead the league in offensive rebounds, it means you miss a lot of shots, too.
True,
so.
This is very, very true. Before I ask you this question, this was a Darko Milicic year, and he was signed in the offseason. Right. And before I get to the question...
All that money in his mattress.
Before I get to the question, we do have to play this very important clip with Kurt Rambis and Chris Webber.
Well, and I think that your career is somewhat indicative. I mean, what year was it that you really felt like you kind of felt like you were in your own in the league?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but we're not talking about me and Darko at the same time. No.
But not till you got to Sacramento. Did your career take off?
Well, I don't want to talk about me. We're talking to you, and we're not going to talk about me and Darko in the same sentence.
That was David Kahn, by the way.
David Kahn, my bad. Not Kahn.
And that was a phenomenal exchange.
It was like a five-minute exchange of it.
It was so uncomfortable, and it was so great.
It was so great.
He was literally like, well, Chris, you know, it took you a while. It's like Chris Webber was amazing from – wasn't he great with the Washington Bullets right away, too? And then he went to the Warriors or something?
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
Well, yeah, and yes. Yes. Amazing. And Darko is one of the biggest busts of all time.
Yeah.
That draft was It was LeBron, Darko, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, right?
Yeah. Whoops. But Darko had all the steam.
There was an article about Darko one time that he kept all of his money under his mattress, in cash. Because he was afraid that banks would lose his money or something.
I love how the Wolves thought, though, that they have unlocked Darko. That's no David Kahn. We've unlocked Darko after all these teams that couldn't unlock him. Okay, buddy.
We're having lunch now. We're doing things we haven't done before. It is a phenomenal clip. Just Google Chris Webber clowning David Kahn on YouTube, and you'll love it.
Chris Webber now fired.
How much term and money, though, did the Wolves give Darko that year in the offseason? So they signed him to a multi-year contract. Yes. What was the contract? Do you remember?
Judd, I believe it was a 3-year, $21 million contract.
Okay. Yep. Final guess. Let's go with it. Yep, that's fine.
It's very, very close. It's extremely close. And I feel like I should just give it to you. It was
24.
420. 4 years, $20 million. I think that's close.
No,
I'll
that's
give
wrong.
It to you.
No, the term is off.
Okay. The term is off. Yeah,
that's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. It was 4 years, $20 million for Dark. No.
They gave that dude a 4-year contract.
Yeah, they turned him around.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, Michael Jordan, you know, you really didn't come into your own until a few years into your career at the Bulls. You're like Darko.
Yeah, God, I mean, you broke your foot, right? Some injuries, right? You put some money under a mattress once. All right. Is that it?
I think that's it. Yeah, I have one more question, but it's so obscure. It's so obscure.
Well, let's hear it.
Come on.
Let's hear it. Come on.
Right. Don't hold on us. Come on.
If we're going to do this, let's do it.
So the Wolves technically had 4 first-round picks that year. They technically had 4.
And then with trades and all the other stuff.
So I'll give you, Wes Johnson went 4th overall. Who are the other 3 first-round picks the Wolves had the rights to?
Oh.
Was Ty Lawson one of them?
No. I've heard of one of these guys.
Wayne Ellington. There's a bunch of... This might have been one of the years where David Kahn, spun his way, traded a bunch of first-round picks for, cash or something. Didn't he try to get out from underneath guaranteed contracts and trade it back?
How many of these guys actually ended up with the Wolves? Can I ask you that?
I think just Wes Johnson.
Yeah, I don't remember. One of these guys. This is pretty bad.
All right.
So,
I can't remember. These names are all going to ring a bell.
At 16th, the Wolves traded with Portland.
Luke Babbitt. Yeah.
At 23, the Wolves traded with the Wizards. Trevor Booker.
Okay.
The 30th overall. The first name?
Yeah, I want to see if I can get the last name.
Lazar
Haywood. Hayward.
There you go. Random season recall, man.
There it is.
That was about as... That was ugly.
I think if this fight went to the judges, it would have been five out of five rounds.
Yeah.
You'd be Conor McGregor on Saturday.
They'd both have knocked each other down a couple times.
Surgery on your leg.
What do you mean?
Snapped.
But I got a couple of very specific things right. Offensive rebounding and the exact record.
Yeah,
and Lazar Haywood.
I didn't catch any breaks.
You didn't catch any breaks. Yeah, you got the color of the N and the star right on your jersey.
That's not true. I got a couple tough ones right, but I didn't get many of them, and so I took a lot of heat.
Listen, before we say goodbye, let's say hello to a golfer's paradise. All right. We should send Judd over to PXG Minneapolis and see. I actually don't think they let you touch the Gen 4 clubs because you got to know what you're doing to swing the Gen 4 clubs.
Don't do that.
That'd be like going to space. I'm not going to space.
Yeah. I love how all these billionaires now are just like, well, what do we do with all this money? We haven't paid taxes in 20 years. Let's go to space.
I got a quick question before we're done about the space travel thing, but I digress.
Yeah, well, PXG is looking to send your golf ball to space with these Gen 4 clubs, the 0 to 11 clubs. They've got clubs priced in many different ranges. So depending on where your game is at, you can find what you need. Plus apparel, all kinds of great hats, shirts. PXG Minneapolis, Southdale Center. Find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis.
So I thought when you went to space, you went into space. But it sounds like you go to the precipice of space and then just come back.
That's good enough for me.
I'm not going.
No, but I mean,
I don't need to go to Jupiter.
A commercial airplane is as close as I'm getting to space, and I'm okay with that. I get the land, the aliens get the space, the sharks get the sea. That's the agreement we've all made. Okay, I don't want to deal with it.
But my question is, I didn't realize that I was considered going to space if you like touch space and then just come right back. That to me sounds like a waste of time. Like if you're going to go to space, go to the moon. And if you're not going to go to space like Declan or me, just stay home.
Who's going to be the first chain restaurant or hotel group to put a hotel on the moon?
Chili's.
Or is Chili's. I want my baby back.
Yeah. Chili's.
I want to go to the moon, go to the moon, go to the moon.
Applebee's two-for-one appetizers after you reach the edge of the atmosphere.
Eating good in the moon of Hood.
God almighty.
That one might need some honing there. Boy. Tomorrow, write that down, predictions and an accountability session. Thanks for hanging out with us on this retro edition of Mackie and Judd. We'll see you guys tomorrow.